Hello and welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast powered by Speedmaster.
At the eighth mile, she's leading Bo Butner at the finish line stripe. It's Cameron Caruso for the first time, 6.592.
On this episode, we look back at a great Phoenix weekend, talk to Paul Lee, and preview the four-wide Vegas race.
And there goes Gage Herrera. Vinny, Vidi, Vici. He came, he saw, he conquered.
A wild weekend and a funny car driver on the rise.
Chad Green's out first by a bunch. They get to the finish line stripe, and it's Chad Green. 391.6 on a hole shot, a 33 line.
This is the NHRA Insider.
Into the night they go, and the wind light comes on for Doug Collada. 367.3, 334 miles an hour.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast powered by Speedmaster. I am your host, Brian Loans, and we are here with a fun episode. Got to thank Speedmaster, your home for high performance. You can check out all their engine parts from valve train components, everything from mild to wild. You want to build a nice street-going hot rod motor for your late model or your muscle car? They have parts, cylinder heads, valve train, rods, blocks, they have all that stuff. Or if you really want to step up the program, they have hardcore racing parts as well. Everything from the ignition all the way down to the crankshaft, they can handle you. Check them out at all your major speed parts retailers, or you can check them out at speedmaster79.com. So it's going to be a fun show today. We have one guest. That's going to be Paul Lee, course driver of the McLeod Clutches, FTI Performance, Silver Sport Transmissions, Power Built Tools Dodge, and a guy that is on an epic rise this season, driving the car this year, being tuned by John Medlin, and of course, Johnny Lindbergh. Had Johnny on a few episodes ago, but it's going to be great to talk to Paul. They were on what looked to be a dominating Arizona weekend and then ran into some mechanical failure. We're going to talk about that. But really, the story of that car has been the turnaround, the progress, and the performances that it's been turning in. Nearly 50 races between Paul Lee being a top half qualifier at back-to-back events. So we're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up for the four-wide race. And, of course, I want to talk now about what we just saw at the Lucas Oil NHRA Arizona Nationals, which was just a spectacular race. You know, for starters, going back to that facility after the uncertainty of leaving last year and maybe the idea of us not going back there, the fact that we were back, the fact that we sold the joint out Saturday and Sunday and provided just a heck of a – it was a whale of a show, a whale of a show for fans. The start of the weekend was a little touch and go. Friday, weather conditions were bizarre, crazy wind, crosswinds. You had a bunch of stuff, kind of dust and dirt and stuff blowing on the top end of the racetrack. Surface was loose, to say, for low downforce cars. That's why Pro Stock didn't run Friday. A lot of people were kind of freaked out by that. Ultimately, you know, we talked to Greg Anderson and some of the other competitors that afternoon. They said, listen, this would have been the wrong move. Are we disappointed we're not out there right now? Absolutely. Are we disappointed that we're not having to piece race cars back together again? No. Ultimately, Pro Stock got full qualifying. They got their three shots on Saturday, and it all worked out to set up a great field. And, of course, that classic final with Greg Anderson and Jay Coughlin weaving their way, if you will, through eliminations to battle it out. The Nitro category qualifying started on Friday. Now, those cars, with the big downforce they have, were able to power through the top end of that racetrack, and we saw runs right out of the gate. Those high 380, low 390 runs certainly gave us a great indication. Then we move into Saturday and Sunday, a racetrack that peaks at about 125 degrees Saturday, then peaks at about 130 degrees on Sunday. So it provided the hottest track conditions of the year so far for these teams to negotiate. And we saw the results of that. The results of that were, in my mind, when I build the perfect drag race in my mind, part of it is I want the funny cars to look real hard to drive, because they always are, and they always were, and there was a lot of pedaling and a lot of crazy stuff going on, especially during the early rounds on Sunday in funny car. I want the top fuel cars to be, you know, the precise scalpel-like instruments that they are, and that's also what we saw. We saw just snappy, great reaction times, a lot of great side-by-side racing, and an epic final round between Justin Ashley and Sean Langdon, who collected his second win of the year. For Austin Prock, that first funny car victory, which, as I mentioned on the show, kind of seemed an inevitability. Obviously, they won the race in Bradenton before Gainesville, make the final in Gainesville, and the car is as strong now as it ever was, as we'd expect, intact team, intact crew chief, And Thomas Prock, his brother, the now assistant crew chief with his dad, Jimmy, tuning that car. But I do think it bears discussion a little bit in the fact that, you know, Austin Prock has met the expectations, which were off the charts. You know, there are difficult things to do in sports. And to me, one of the difficult things is to have an opportunity, which the whole world knows what the opportunity is. The whole world knows what the delivery expectations are on that opportunity. And then really very early on, delivering on them. And he has made the transition to Funny Car in a more flawless fashion than I've ever seen anybody make. We've had several drivers transfer over back and forth over the course of years, but I'm not sure in my own personal life experience in drag racing, I've watched somebody do it with the seamless kind of nature that Austin has. He's making the right decisions, clearly still learning stuff. He'll tell you that as well, but he gets out of that car, exudes confidence, exudes the type of energy that you love to see, and it just kind of radiates off him. So they had the weekend that we thought they could, we thought they might should, and they delivered on it. So that is great news. And when we talked to Paul Lee, look, that car, if anybody on the grounds, Tony and I, especially after the first round on Sunday when he ran a 397, Tony and I were looking at each other saying, this is the car. This guy and this car and this team, this is the car. And we're going to talk about the ascendancy of that car from the beginning of the year in Gainesville through what we saw early in Pomona. And, of course, it was looking not inevitable, but it was looking like that car was just absolutely penciled in for deep rounds, if not a final. And then they ran into a problem. So we'll get the details on that. In Pro Stock, it was a lot of tire shaking. It was a lot of pedaling. Of course, we had the Camry Caruso crash that happened. That was during final qualifying on Saturday. But in reality, in the Pro Stock race was maybe different than anything we had ever seen or had seen in a long time. Greg Anderson, when he won and he got his Wally at the top end, when Bruno was talking to him, said something that I thought was pretty cool. He said, we outraced him today. And, you know, you might think, well, when you win a race, don't you just outrace anybody? No, that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes you out horsepower everybody. Sometimes you outdrive everybody. But when you're a guy like Greg Anderson, who prides himself on the ability to adapt to conditions, to adapt to what's in front of him, to take on all comers, outracing is a big term to use. It's a great term to use because it means it's the whole package. And that guy has been on the starting line so far this year, to a level that we've not seen in a pretty long time out of Greg. Never bad. I'm not saying the guy fell off the table, but what we're seeing is just an absolutely pounding effect. He is aggressive on the starting line, more so than we've ever seen him in this part of a year. He'll often dial it up in the countdown, this or that, but you know, you're looking at a guy consistently who's cracking off 20s and or better than that, or O's in the case we saw during the Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge. He was like, what, 006 or something, the 002. But ultimately, Greg Anderson is looking very good. And it was not a horsepower-style Pro Stock race this weekend. It was a chassis tuning, navigate the starting line, navigate the conditions, and get it to the finish line in one piece type of race. And that's where a veteran, and that's like the lowest term you can use to describe Greg, or the least, you know, gigantic term you could use to describe a guy with 104 wins, but that's really what he is, and that experience was applied. I want to land on Top Fuel, though, because, you know, when I think of Top Fuel final rounds, memorable ones for me, you know, there are memorable races that have been won over the course of years, whether it's upsets or whether it's, you know, whether it's drivers that are getting a first victory or whatnot. This Top Fuel final was an encapsulation of everything we can and should expect in 2024. You know, Sean Langdon and that car, my goodness, you know, basically the same team under different leadership with Brian Hewson. And with that has come just an absolutely rip-roaring level of success. Two wins in the first three races And even the most optimistic of people, including Sean, may not have expected that to be the case to start the year. So then the question has to become, why was it so good? What was it about this particular final that that was, you know, head and shoulders above some others? And to me, it was this idea of Langdon, best car in the country right now, who is a championship level driver. Justin Ashley wins the Winter Nationals on Saturday, starts mowing through the field on Sunday. Also, just let's just call it what it is, the best driver in the category in the starting line right now we've seen over the last several seasons. It is a proven commodity, beyond a proven commodity at this point. So you take those two elements and you place them next to each other, and you take a car in Langdon's that I would put pound for pound a little bit ahead of Ashley's. I take a reactor in Ashley that I'm probably going to put pound for pound, as good as Sean is, I'm going to put Ashley a little bit ahead of him in that category. And then the light flashes, and we see two drivers within 5/1000ths of each other. We see the Coletta Air car get to the finish line first to win the second of three races this year. And it was clean. It was a battle. It was exactly what Top Fuel drag racing at its highest level should look like. And that's what we're just going to see week in after week out in this thing. And it is enough to really make you appreciate the quality of competition, certainly the quality of the drivers, where you have to be to succeed in the class now versus where you had to be to succeed. And I don't mean win championships. You've always had to have been elevated to an elite level to win a championship in this category. But to consider yourself a top five car anymore, different plane of existence. A top five car 4 or 5 years ago, if we go back and look at the performance records of both the race car and the driver, whether it be consistency, whether it be average elapsed time, all that stuff, is in a different league now than it was then. It is evolution at its highest form. And a lot of it is because of, as we know, rule package is pretty restricted. You can only do what you can do with what you got. And as we continue to kind of narrow and sharpen that saw blade, it gets even more and more precise when it cuts. And those that have been able to do that refining and do that, just finite management, you know, brings us the results we see. And again, that final lived up to the hype. Definitely not the last one of those we're going to see between those two guys. And it was great from top to bottom. The Top Fuel race with its hole shots and with its, great elapsed times we saw over the course of a weekend, just absolutely delivered upon delivering. So that was pretty great. Jasmine Salinas, she is making great strides. She made 5 test runs on Monday following the race, and this is exactly what the doctor ordered for Jasmine. She looks good in the car. She looks great and composed in interviews. She gives thoughtful answers. Can't say enough about that element, and she is coming along quick after being, thrust into this thing in a way that she certainly never expected to be. The 5 test runs, in my mind, will yield immediate results for her. And she's learning. She's learning. She'll tell you she's learning. The starting line is where that's going to start to really come to fruition. All of the test runs, every time you stage that car and you're taking a little bit of information away from it, it's going to make you better and better. Ida Zetterstrom made test runs on Monday following the race as well, starting to get a little bit of a clearer picture on when we're going to see her out and about in a Top Fuel dragster, but understand that she will be out this year in a Top Fuel car. And these test runs she made on Monday were the very first kind of, like I say, a quantum leap forward, but they were the very first definitive step in her Top Fuel debut, which will be coming later this year. So a lot going on. We got to touch on our 4-wide race. We're going to have Paul Leon as our guest here in just a couple of minutes. But when I look at the 4-wide race, especially the first of the two, we are guaranteed, just chalk it up somewhere, that someone's going to make a mistake. In elimination, somebody of note will make a mistake. It just happens every year. It happens to the best of them, as we saw last year in Vegas. And that's especially true at this first one. At the second one, now that we've done it once, people kind of get a little bit more comfortable. But during this first one, drivers that are, especially in Top Fuel, I'm going to say, in Funny Car, maybe a little bit less apt to happen, but in Top Fuel, with the cars as grouped as tightly as they are, with the drivers seemingly as tightly grouped as they are, that is where we're more apt to see somebody make a faux pas in a public fashion in Vegas. Weather's looking great. It is looking temperate. It is looking fast. Vegas is a bit of an elevation racetrack, but it kind of gets offset in a lot of ways because we typically, knock on wood, in the spring and the fall, end up with such nice air that the engines can make great power and almost deceive us on the elevation. Records, I'm not saying it will be set, but records can be set in Las Vegas because of just how good the surface is and because of how dry the air is and because of how much fuel you can pour into one of these suckers, especially a nitro engine, and really make it sing through the top end of the racetrack. So, not going to oversell you anything about Vegas. We've done this enough now that you know what's coming. And the best thing about what we know is coming is that within that four-wide package, somebody in one of our pro categories guaranteed is going to screw something up. It's that deviation. I used the analogy a couple years ago in Charlotte of if you worked at an automobile plant and you worked at the same spot on the line, installing the same part on the car, and you did it for 10 years straight. And then you come in and they've changed your spot on the line. They have sped the line up or slowed it down so your cadence is off. You're doing a different job and you've deviated from your muscle memory, from your mental preparation, from your just being able to pick the part up, put the part on the car, move on to the next one. You now have to start thinking about stuff. And you, once we start thinking, we start slowing down and complicating our various mental, you know, process elements. And this is when things can get a little on the hairy side. So, you know, people at home, it's very difficult for us to articulate the idea that it is kind of chaotic. And you're like, well, how chaotic can it be? You look at the top of the tree, you go in, bing, bing, get on the racetrack. It speaks to the level of laser focus these drivers have to be successful. You know, we saw Josh Hart with a double step in Phoenix, and we saw Sean Langdon chase him off. And he chased him off the start line because you heard the car leave. It's that hair trigger mental focus that now gets thrown this additional loop. And it's not never necessarily remembering what lane you're in. That happens. Sometimes you'll see the crew chief's motion, 1, 2, 3, or 4. But it's more on the cadence of how the race begins. If you go in and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and somebody's three lanes over, and they think they're on the looking at the right bulb, but they're looking at the wrong bulb, they're going to throw everybody for a Titanic loop. So in four-wide racing, what is good for the goose isn't necessarily good for the gander, and what's bad for the goose is bad for the whole gander, and that's typically what we end up seeing. So have your decoder rings out and be ready for four wide action, because it is going to be a great race. One final point on this: the level of competition with Pro Stock now, Greg Anderson getting a victory, Dallas Glenn making the final, Erica's car shook and spun like so many other Pro Stock cars had done over various parts of the weekend. But that changes complexion of Pro Stock a little bit, because Erica was just marching through the first couple races of the year. So when we see it go to Dallas for the Winter Nationals win, we see it go to Greg on Sunday, not that she needs any more motivation. She's never lacked for that, never will lack for that. She's a six-time champion. She is going to be swinging. She has won 10 races at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Maybe it's 11 now. Maybe it was 10 last year. But she's won 11 times there, 10, 11, whatever, double digits. So she's the car to beat still. Make no mistake about it. And at this racetrack, she's the car to beat like forever. So we'll find out how that plays out for her. Lastly, on the fuel side, tightness of competition will force some of these errors that I've mentioned. It's one thing when you have a car that's super fast and you can go up there and almost be relaxed to the point of knowing you got people covered. Well, as we've seen, not the case in Funny Car, not the case in Top Fuel. A little tension on the performance side will turn itself into some big tension on the starting line staging side. It's going to be chaos, and that's why we love it. Or we don't. Some people are virulently against four-wide drag racing. Some people really like it. The only way I can say it is this. If you're a running back or you're an NFL football player and you got to go out there and it's been pouring buckets for 3 days in the field and it's going to pour buckets of rain that Sunday, you still got to play. You don't like playing in the rain? Play. You don't like playing in the snow? Still got to play. So the idea of being a professional, locking it down, you can say, I hate playing in the snow. You can say, I hate playing in the rain. And I almost would respect somebody and will respect somebody more when they say, I hate doing this, but I'm here to do it, and I'm going to win the damn race. And I'm not going to let my feelings toward the format cloud, because some people do let that happen. There are people, I will guarantee you, there are people that are rolling in, professional racers rolling into Vegas, that just shoulder slump. They hate this four-wide stuff. They don't want to do it, and the results will show in their performance. Sports psychology 101. Right? You never come in with a negative attitude to do anything. You have to come in with a positive attitude. Almost sell yourself on what you're going to do. But if you're somebody that's a real pro that can look me in the eye and say, I don't like this. We do it twice. I'm a professional. This is my occupation. This is my chosen means of getting my thrills in life, or however you want to put your role in drag racing. And then you can say to me, but I'm going to come in here and wipe the floor with everybody, and then I'm going to leave, and I'm going to do it again week after next. So, yeah, that is the attitude I would probably respect more than somebody says, oh, I love it. You don't have to lie to me. You don't have to lie to me and say, oh, my God, I love it so much. Even if you don't like it, if you can look me in the eye and say, it doesn't matter what I like or don't like, I'm going to come in here and wipe the floor with everybody, I kind of dig that. I kind of dig that approach and that outlook, little attitude. So, when we come back on this episode of the NHRA Insider, powered by Speedmaster, we'll be joined by Paul Lee, who is a funny car racer, as I mentioned, performance-wise, both in the car and down the racetrack, on the rise. Going to talk about John Medlin, Johnny Lindberg, and everything that his team has going on, and it's all going in the right direction. Stay with us. Welcome back to the NHRA Insider Podcast, powered by Speedmaster. Our guest on this show, he is the driver of the McLeod FTI Silver Sport Transmissions, Powerbuilt Tools, Dodge Charger, SRT Hellcat Red Eye. I said it all. Paul Lee, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I don't know how you do that, but you always are able to get in everybody's sponsors, man. I don't know how you do it, man. My tongue would be twisted, but it's, good job.
It's a party trick, I guess. But, you know, man, I gotta believe, and we'll get to the way Sunday ended, but I got to believe up until that moment, you have to have been very, very satisfied with the race car you had in Phoenix.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I mean, it's been some work, but I tell you what, it's, you know, the first time in many years probably ever in NHRA nitro car, funny cars, that I really believe I had a car that could win the race. And I haven't been more excited on race day than I was this past Sunday.
You know, we talk about numbers and stuff, and I mentioned this in my monologue to start the show, but it had been 47 races since you had been a back-to-back top half qualifier. And to me, that's a number that stands out because it speaks to the fact that this program is absolutely working.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been a long time coming, as you know. I mean, but you know, it's all about hard, you know, work and getting the right people. It's all about the people, you know. Well, the money comes first, but you know, once you know the money, it's still, you can have all the money in the world, if you don't have the right people, you're still not going to do anything any good. So it's all about organizing the right group of guys and girls that we have on our team, and for, you know, it's a team sport for sure, and then especially led by the crew chiefs and, you know, with our teacher / consultant, John Medlin. So, you know, that's a good package we have right now.
So I'm interested to know, did you start to feel the kind of positive forward motion of this car even back in Bradenton? Because I can look at what happened in Gainesville. I can look at what happened in Pomona and how the car looked in Phoenix. But I'm guessing for you, it probably started even before that.
100% at Bradenton, for sure. So in the off season, you know, We at the end of the season last year, John Medlin gave me a list. He goes, if you want to, he knows what my goals were.
Sure.
My goals are just, you know, to be a top five car, right? So he goes, if you want to be a top five car, this is the parts you're going to need to upgrade. You know, we had older cylinder heads and older fuel pumps, right? And that's an important part of the car. And he said, you know, we updated the six disc clutch the year before.
Yeah.
We got all new six disc stuff from JFR, which was great. And then in this off season, you know, he gave me a list. You know, it was a pretty good list. And he goes, cylinder heads all need to be upgraded, which is a lot. You know, and you need like 10 sets of heads, right? And then the fuel pumps. He says this is the fuel pumps you got to get, the Rexert pumps, right? So we upgraded all that stuff and a bunch of, you know, new crankshafts and rods, pistons, pretty much everything. So we got the same stuff anybody else has, and we made that big investment. And then so, you know, with that big investment and new parts, now the tune-up changes, right?
Yeah.
So we couldn't really use the tune-up from last year. And so Bradenton test session was going to be, you know, all about, getting our new tune-up ready for this year. And sure enough, right away, the first full run, the thing runs an 80. I was like, man, you guys are good. I was surprised myself. It was like, I was pleasantly surprised. I think the first full run we made, you know, we made a couple of half-track hits, you know, so those guys could adjust the fuel system and, you know, tweak it a little bit. But the first full run, he says, well, go ahead, take it, you know, as far as it feels good. Well, it felt good. It went 88, I think it was, on the first run, or 87. It was like, wow. And so, I mean, it's pretty impressive that John and Johnny, which obviously everybody knows John Medlin's history, and then Johnny Lindberg, the kid, the guy's smart, man. He's super smart, very meticulous, and details matter in these things. And I don't think I've ever had anybody that's been that detail-oriented on this car, and that's what's making the difference.
You know, and I had Johnny on this show a few weeks ago, and it was great to talk to him. I have insane amounts of respect for the guy because of what he accomplished. You know, when he does so well in Europe and decides to push all his chips in the middle of the table and comes over here with his brother to run alcohol cars and obviously becomes just a total dominating force there. And, you know, none of these things happen by accident. But I think one of the more endearing things we talked about, I said, you know, what's the most intimidating part of this? And he kind of said, I'm looking around at all these new parts, man. He's like, I've never seen so many new parts in my whole life, you know? And and you gotta love a guy who respects that. You know, to me, that's a unique characteristic of Johnny.
Well, that's 100% right. I mean, he is that kind of guy where I can totally trust him with my bank account.
Yeah.
Because he truly does treat my money like it's his.
Yeah.
You know, he only buys the stuff we need. And, you know, we bought a lot of stuff because we needed it.
Sure.
But, you know, but that's okay because just his character, the guy's character is second to none, you know, and that matters, right?
It's
talent and character and the way he runs my team. I don't have to worry about anything. I just get the bills and I pay him and that's it. He's running, you know, I'm in California. He's in the shop in India, you know, running everything. And I totally trust everything that he's doing. It's awesome to have that feeling where you don't have to worry about anything. You know, he's not robbing you. He's treating my money like it's his. You know, it's just been a great deal so far.
And on the other side of it, there's something to be said for a guy who has been a world champion multiple times over and who has, you know, successfully opened and operates a chassis building business. He's done and built cars that are championship level there as well. There's something to be said about a guy that's done all that and yet still works and looks at a guy like John Medlin and absorbs the information that's coming in. And I know it's a great back and forth process those guys have, but he very much understands what his opportunity is here. And he's not walking in there with his chest puffed out like he's going to teach John something.
Oh, no, not at all. Matter of fact, in the beginning of the year when he said this, when we were all talking about it, he said he wouldn't even do it if it wasn't for John being part of it. You know, he knows at that time, you know, he doesn't have the experience to, you know, to do what we're about to do without John, you know, without John overseeing him. And he's like a sponge, man. He's you know, he wants to learn from John. And I mean, who wouldn't want that opportunity? If you want to be a crew chief, which you can make a good living as a crew chief in the sport, if you're good, drivers don't make a living much. I know that.
Right.
But, you know, but I don't worry about that because I have my businesses and that's how I make my money. And this is our fun and our competitive outlet.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, him and John working together, and they both think alike. It's really funny that when you watch those two talk to each other, they almost like finish each other's sentences. And when John Medlin's talking, Johnny's there listening and you know, he's not thinking that he knows it all. And that's very important.
Yeah, and you know, there are racers and there are crew chiefs, and then there's like the whole package drag racer, and that's really what I see Johnny Lindbergh as, and almost unique among his generation in that respect. He's a throwback in a lot of ways, and really I think in a lot of the good ways, you know, he's a guy that I've known for a long time, as you have, but it's like, not that he was ever immature, but he's also a guy that has matured as his roles have grown in this sport. And some guys have a little bit of arrested development out there, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying, for sure, 100%. No, he's like, you know what you remind, like you just said, he's like the old school guy, like a Dale Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like a Ken Vinny or a Dale Armstrong. A guy could build his own car, right?
Yeah.
Tune it and drive it. Right. You know, and those guys were alcohol racers, remember?
Yes.
So and they turned out to be pioneers and legends in the sport. And Johnny is like that. He's like, you know, he's like that old school guy. He could do everything, and he's improved the car so much. I mean, it's so nice to drive right now. And a lot of it was a lot of the things that he fixed on the car that makes it totally a drivable car. And that's pretty important for the driver to be able to, you know, when the thing's moving around, to be able to correct it. And he really made a lot of improvements because he knows how to build a car. It's pretty awesome.
Some of the best people I've ever worked with in my life, and I'm guessing, you know, some of the best people you've been able to manage and help grow in your professional pursuits, these are the people that when something in my role when I was doing fleet management and stuff like that, running truck fleets, and something worked well, they'd come and say, why did that work? And the answer, you had to give a definitive answer. You don't just raise your hand and say, well, I guess we guessed and got it right. And the same thing would be, why did this not work? And you had to have a definitive answer. And those are the people, you know, that made me better, I think, in my own professional life. I'm guessing these are the type of guys that you can go to and say, why did that work, and get an answer is the same as, why did that not work?
Oh yeah, he does that. He'll even come tell me. So, you know, we're doing this, and he'll, you know, he's a very good communicator too. So he's a good manager of the guys and the team, you know, great communication there. I mean, communication's everything. So when he does something or changes it, he comes to me and says, hey, I think I made this better. I mean, he changed the whole brake system on the car in the off season, which made it better. You know what I mean? So, you know, and the brakes are way better than they were last year because he said, hey, you mind if I change this? And I'm going to tell you why. Because this, and, you know, he made a change. And sure enough, you know, the brakes weren't great. And it's not just about stopping, too. The brakes are about staging the car.
I was going to say your staging process has to be more precise in that effect.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the car is going to stop with any brakes, right, pretty much for most all tracks. But, you know, it's more about precise staging the car if the brakes are real solid. That's just one example of the things he changed on the car. For the better.
Yeah, and look, reaction time-wise, you're right there in the ballgame. I mean, we're seeing 60s. We're seeing the type of lights that that a top-level competitive guy should have. And all this stuff incrementally adds up to that effect.
Yeah, it does. Because, I mean, as a driver, and any driver can tell you, when you have confidence in the car, you can do better.
Yeah.
When you're like, you don't know what it's going to do. Is it going to smoke the tires? Is it going to blow up? You know, you're not that confident in the car. And as a driver, confidence in the car is a big deal, right? So, and right now I have, you know, 100% confidence in the race car, being able to go down the track, and we haven't hurt a part all year, which is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've been running fast and haven't hurt hardly anything. So it's so far so good, and knock on wood, you know, but the, you know, confidence in the car is a big deal to drivers.
Is this process kind of what you might have imagined it to be, in that, you know, it is about leaving one weekend and going, okay, we made this step forward. It's not necessarily about winning the first race, winning the second race, in my mind anyway. And is it the same in your mind, where it's like you can get on a plane on Sunday or drive back home on Sunday night and know to yourself that we actually made a step forward this weekend?
Oh, yeah, we did, even though, you know, second round thing kind of messed up. But we had a car that went down the track every time.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how you're going to win races. We did. You know, it's been a long time coming. I've never really had that. You know, since I started this team 6 years ago, I haven't had a car that goes down the track on a consistent basis. And it's, it just gives you a different feeling. Like, I'm pretty confident that we have a car that could win a race, you know, and win rounds. I mean, that's about winning rounds. And, you know, we're competitive. We're out there to win rounds. And, you know, hopefully with a little luck on our side, we could, you know, win a race here soon. But, you know, yeah, it's been ever since Bradenton, from the first run, it's been going forward. I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, and I think it gets lost, and we try to make a point of it on the shows, but it sometimes gets lost to the average fan that a car that could come out and run a 387, 388 on a cool, cloudy Friday, and then come back and run a 97 on a 120-some-degree racetrack is a big deal. Like, that, the fact that you can have that type of command is a huge deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, those two Saturday runs when it was hot, a 97 and a 96, I believe, ran, something like that. But, yeah, I mean, those two were more almost amazing as the run we
right.
made on Friday.
Right.
Because, you know, not a whole lot of cars made three-second runs, at least two of them. So, I mean, and that's what it takes on race day, as you saw, you know, right?
Yeah.
You know, low 4.0s and high 390s, you know, you got to race the racetrack. And one thing good about Johnny Lindbergh, he is good about racing the racetrack. He doesn't have this big ego where he's got to set low ET every round. He just wants to go down the track as fast as he thinks that the track will let him go.
Yeah, and look, we're only – now finally three races in. We were what, 1¾ races in until we ended up Phoenix. Now we're three races in. But you know, this the complexion of the top part of this class has begun to change pretty quickly this year. Yes, the big names we expect are still there, but you've inserted yourself in there. We're seeing a J.R. Todd car that is certainly better than it was and has been in that group as well. And it makes things a lot more interesting for the guys in the grandstands to know that it's going to be a different group than the same three or four people we've seen every year.
Yeah, I'm happy about that for sure, and that's our goal.
Yeah.
I mean, our goal has been, you know, we want to be a top five car. We want to be in there mixing things up with these big guys. So, and that's what we're working towards. We're working hard at it, and I'm, you know, pretty excited about this weekend in Vegas.
So let's talk a little bit about the high performance aftermarket, because those that is where your business interests are concentrated, some of them anyway. McLeod clutches, Silver Sport transmissions. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the death of the automatic or the manual transmission, but I think I speak with some confidence here. You guys are selling those things as fast as Tremec can build them.
Well, yeah, oh, you are. I mean, you know, we're Silver Sport is the largest Tremec elite distributor in the country. We're the major supplier to a lot of the big houses like Summit and Jags. We supply them with their Tremecs. You know, you're right. We sell them, especially the TKXs. We sell them as fast as we get them in. And then, of course, with that is, you know, the clutches, the McLeod clutches that go with it, the RXT, RSTs, the, you know, the dual disc,
yeah,
you know, clutch that matches perfectly with the Tremec transmission. We've been very lucky and successful with matching those. So every time, you know, we sell a kit, a super fit kit or a perfect fit kit from Silver Sport, it comes, you know, with everything, the
yeah.
Tremec transmission, the shifter, the McLeod clutch, bell housing, hydraulic bearing, if someone wants it. Comes with the whole kit. So the market's still alive in the muscle car world, you know, the classic cars, muscle cars, and that's our big customer, is the people who are still putting together those Mustangs and the Camaros and a lot of the stuff. I mean, you can't even buy a car hardly without a clutch in it anymore, but we still seem to sell lots of clutches, and you know, we have a big loyal customer base, which is we're pretty proud of.
No, it's a great brand. I mean, the McLeod brand specifically has been around forever. And on the automatic side, you're involved with FTI. And I know, you know, to me, when I'm not doing NHRA stuff, I'll often sneak off and do some, whether it's big money sportsman racing or some of the Radial Outlaw stuff or even some of the Outlaw Pro Mod stuff. And you know, the FTI name is there everywhere. You know, there's FTI converters and a lot of pro mods. And, of course, you know, you have a huge presence in sportsman drag racing as well.
Oh, yeah. Our big customer base is, like you said, the high-dollar bracket racers like the Spring Flings and those, you know, La Super Comp, Super Gas, big market for us, top sportsman, top dragster, and, of course, pro mod. Matter of fact, there's a lot of pro mods out there that have our stuff that don't want anybody to know we have our stuff. So you might not see any stickers on the car, but a lot of those guys, I mean, they're pretty secretive over there, which is kind of funny. But yeah, they don't want other people to know. But we, you know, we have a great sportsman customer base with FTI and the converter market.
And it's funny because in the pro mod world, like you mentioned, pro mod torque converters these days are like 1980s pro stock intake manifolds. Like nobody wants to show you what it is. Nobody wants you to know what's going on with their stator combination or whatever they're doing with it. So it is kind of cool. One other aspect of Phoenix Weekend I wanted to touch upon was, of course, Krista Baldwin works for you. She's a big part of what you do on a day-to-day basis in your companies. To see her go out there and run that 75 was just a very cool moment. I think for anybody that's ever met Krista or watched her on TV or whatever, to see what that run meant to her was awesome.
That was her, one of her goals. And then in the off season, you know, she had a lot of old stuff,
yep.
You know, and she upgraded it when she got Pat Dakin, when he decided to retire. She got the whole team. I mean, not just the parts,
right.
The trailer, the truck, everything, the guys too, the whole team, you know, Scott Graham, the crew chief, who actually, you know, was there when she was born, you
amazing.
Know, Scott Graham was her dad's crew chief. So it's kind of come full circle. And yeah, we're pretty proud of her. And, you know, and Phoenix, you know, both of our programs, you know, the Funny Car program
yeah.
and her dragster program are, you know, shown that we're actually moving forward in this thing. You know, our goals are, you know, to be out there full time, both of us,
yeah.
right? You know, her on one side, me on the other side of the hospitality. We have a nice big hospitality area. So we're growing. And you can tell from this weekend, we are moving forward. I'm pretty proud of her.
So we go into a four-wide weekend. We're going to have two of those back-to-back with a little bit of a break in the middle. But we go to Vegas for the four-wide race. Everybody has their opinions, but we're doing it, and we're going to do it. What's your take on four-wide drag racing?
Yeah, I mean...
Say no more.
As a driver, it's like, it's,
yeah.
you know, I mean, it's okay. It's a show for the fans, really. I mean, when it comes down to it,
yeah.
it's about the fans, right?
Yep.
I mean... you know, to me, drag racing, I'm an old school guy.
Sure.
Right? I'm one of the older drivers out there. I've been around going to these things since the 70s. To me, drag racing is a guy you can see in the other lane.
Yeah.
You know, when it's four wide, you can't see the other guys, really. But it is a show for the fans. So I'm kind of like mixed emotions about it, to be honest.
I'm with you.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it is a fan show, and if the fans want to see it, we're there for it. And it's, you know, similar to what we did in Bradenton. We made three runs in one day. Why? Because of the fans.
Yeah.
It's harder on us, but, you know, we want to make a show for the fans. That's our goal. So, you know, without the fans, we don't race. You know, well, we would race without it.
Right.
You know, as competitors,
right.
We would race if nobody was in the stands, right? But at the end of the day, we don't get paid unless the people come to the race. So if the fans want to see it, you know, we'll do it.
And then the last thing I want to ask you about, and you segued into this perfectly, is the Virginia race has been announced. We're going to have a two-day event for the pros, meaning three qualifying sessions on Saturday. We race on Sunday. It was a format that appeared to work very well in Bradenton. So you do mention it's a little more hectic trying to turn the car that many times on a Saturday. But what are your thoughts on that format?
Oh, man. Well, first, I'm on the pro board, right?
Sure.
So when we met with NHRA, they asked us about it. They said, you know, hey, you guys made the three runs in one day, and how'd that work out? And we said it worked out great. You know, the fans never left. We had nonstop action.
Sure.
And we were pretty proud of that. And when someone asked me, well, you know, it's going to be fast turnaround, but it's no different than a race day on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely. So it does kind of place you in that intense. My dogs are all into it, as you can hear. So it does kind of it kind of puts everybody in a race day mode, even though it is a qualifying day.
Yeah, no, I'm super happy we're doing it. I'm super happy that NHRA took the initiative to try something different, that we proved that works. And I'm really happy that NHRA is saying, okay, yeah, that works. Let's try it out. You know, that is, and I think the fans are going to love it. I mean, because you're going to get nonstop action. Instead of having 3-4 hours between qualifiers, like two runs, you get to have three runs in one day. And all the classes, the pro classes, what's better than that? You know, wait till you see us pack them in Virginia on a Saturday.
Yeah, and look, I think as a fan, and, you know, as a, I guess, effectively a professional spectator, the thing that's going to be most interesting for me is watching, you know, having three opportunities at the same racetrack on the same day is going to separate the teams that are good from the teams that are great. Because if you have a great team, by that third qualifying session, you have gathered so much information in a very short amount of time, you should really be able to fly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it worked. It was overwhelmingly successful at Bradenton, and I'm happy that NHRA is willing to try it. It's going to be awesome.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day this morning to chat with us. It's been a very fun thing to watch your team do what they've done so far. We got a long way to go this season, but undoubtedly you are probably more excited about it than even I am.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to seeing everybody in Vegas this weekend.
We'll be right back with more on this episode of the NHRA Insider Podcast when we return. And we are back here on the NHRA Insider with some final thoughts. And again, want to thank Speedmaster, the powered by sponsor of the NHRA Insider Podcast. Make sure you visit them at speedmaster79.com, or you can find their massive array of products on the largest speed parts distributors that are out there. You name it. You want to go shopping online, you want to go to a Summit, you want to go to a Jegs, you want to go across the board. Your local speed shop, I'm sure, has even access to the Speedmaster catalog. As I've mentioned before and will continue to mention, engine hard parts, from the crankshaft to the block to the cylinder heads, camshafts, you name it, they have it. Valve train parts, intake manifolds, induction, ignition. If it involves an engine, Speedmaster has it, an incredible array. I believe over 10,000 parts they have in their inventory, including stuff for all the brands you know and love. If you're wrenching on a classic Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Buick, Mopar, they got you covered. Speedmaster, thank you, the powered by sponsor here in the Insider. So that is going to wrap us up here on this episode. Getting ready to blast off to Vegas in the next day or two. Looking forward to the Four Wide Nationals, as, again, they always provide that kind of deviation from the norm, provide us excitement. We have coverage all weekend long, including the NHRA Insider, powered by Speedmaster, live. We're doing these at every event. I hope you're watching. You can tune in Saturday morning, NHRA's YouTube channel. You can watch us on Tubi, you can watch us on Plex, you can watch us on the Roku channel, you can watch us on the Samsung app. All that stuff is going on. Sling, we're on all these apps, and it's live. So when you tune in to watch that show, it's happening as we make it. This week we'll be having Justin Ashley on and angling to have Greg Anderson as our two guests. Last week, you can go back and watch if you'd like. It was Force, it was Caps, it was Schumacher. It was chaos, and it was brilliantly fun with all three of those guests. But the NHRA Insider Live, powered by Speedmaster, every national event, every Saturday morning. If you're coming to Vegas, we're going to make these things at about 8:30 in the morning. So show up to Vegas, And I will tell you this, if you show up to the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, the strip at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, you show up to watch the Insider and you have a sign, I want signs. I want people making signs. I want to build this into a cool game day style atmosphere. You show up with a sign, I will have a gift for you. If you're listening, do it. What's the gift? I'll figure that out myself. But make sure you show up and check us out. Or tune in all weekend long on FS1, Great Air Windows. You can see us on Sunday afternoon, of course, with our elimination shows, but we have qualifying shows throughout the weekend as well. Check your local listings and check NHRA.com for that information. As always, thanks for watching. I'm Brian Loans, and I'll see you from the TV booth or from the stage of the Insider Live, powered by Speedmaster, at the Strip at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. It's four wide, baby. Love it or hate it, it's happening. I'll see you there.